Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Well, today's episode is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners, and I want to specifically thank Stuart and Linda for their support, and I will be sending you access to our premium site as soon as I have the last May app extra updated. You can support the program at support.greatdetectives.net. Well, now it's time for today's episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, The Henderson Matter, Part 3 and Part 4.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Eve Holden, son.
Hi, Sheriff.
You put in a call for me, did you?
Yes, I'm ready to go to work. Now that the inquest's been held and George Henderson's death is officially an accident, I might be able to move around your little town a little easier.
What can I do for you?
Help me to move around.
The case is closed, far as I'm concerned.
Eve, what's the matter with you? That inquest was a farce. For all I know, Henderson could have been pushed out of that hotel window. The attitude of different people in this town makes that whole thing...
Hold on now, son, hold on. I meant to say it's closed as far as my office is concerned. Personally, I think it needs investigating. We can help each other, maybe, you and me.
Can I come over?
Oh, I better come there. You know how folks are around here.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Culver, Montana, to Paramount Insurance Adjusters, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Henderson matter. The question, accident, suicide, or murder? Expense account item 4, $3.48. One day later to Tim Connor's office in Hartford explaining the situation in Culver.
I'll read it back to you, Mr. Dollar. Mr. Tim Connors, Paramount Insurance Adjusters, Hartford, Connecticut. Coroner's inquest into death of George Henderson, policy number EMP-196667, found death to be accidental. In my opinion, the inquest was not thorough. Have decided to stay on in Culver and conduct my own investigation. If any change, please advise via Western Union, Butte Hotel, Culver. Am forwarding copy of coroner's verdict this date. Best regards, Dollar. Correct?
Okay.
Oh, Mr. Dollar.
Hmm?
Good luck.
Yeah, sure. Expense account item 5, 68 cents, postage. I mailed a copy of the coroner's verdict to Hartford Airmail Special. After that, I went back to my hotel to wait for the sheriff, Eve Holton. Come on in, Eve. Oh.
Hello.
Hello.
Mr. Dollar, my name's Porter. I'm the manager of this hotel.
Oh, well, come in, Mr. Porter.
I can't right now. I've got some other things to attend to.
Well, anything I can do for you, Mr. Porter?
I'm going to have to ask you for your room, Mr. Dollar.
Oh? When?
Today.
Any particular reason?
We're all filled up. The room's been reserved for 6 weeks.
By whom?
What?
Who reserved it?
Why, a man from Bozeman. It's a sort of convention.
Sort of convention? What kind of convention is that, Mr. Porter?
Look, Mr. Dollar, you'll have to leave this room today. The man's coming in tonight.
Aha. And there's no other hotel in town.
That's the way it is, Mr. Dollar.
No other place to stay?
No.
So I have to pack my bags and get out of town, is that it?
I must have the room, Mr. Dollar.
Who asked you to say you wanted the room, Mr. Porter? Who asked you to come here and kick me out?
Why, no one,
go back to no one, Mr. Porter, and you tell no one that I'm staying right here in this room here in Culver until I finish what I have to do here. You tell that to no one, will you?
Mr. Dollar, I'd hate to call the police.
Go ahead, Mr. Porter. Be sure and tell them about the sort of convention you're having and how all the rooms are sold out. Tell them about Mr. No One and tell them I called your bluff. Anything else, Mr. Porter? I was at the stage where I was beginning to take notes for myself. Note one, the mayor didn't want to have an inquest into the death of George Henderson. Note two, when they did have an inquest, they didn't want to really find out anything. Note three, Mr. Hotel Manager wanted me to keep on not finding out anything by getting me out of town. I explained all of this to Eve Holton when he showed up a half an hour later.
Well, kind of tight, isn't it?
I don't know what that means, Sheriff, but it's pretty stupid.
Yeah, it's stupid, son, but it could be effective. Now, I'll tell you what. If Porter calls the police, I'm the police, so don't worry about that. I'll hem him and haw him.
All right, thanks.
Now then, tell me how much your insurance company's stuck for.
$50,000 if Henderson's death goes by as an accident.
The good book says that's what it was.
I know. There's a chance, too, he had a heart failure and fell out of that window.
No, sure. Always a chance.
We might have to dig him up and find out, Sheriff.
Oop. Hold on. Autopsies and digging people up is one thing you'd have a hard time doing around here.
I might insist on it. I don't know. We'll let that go for now. Say, tell me about Mrs. Henderson. Where's she from?
Here. Right here in Culver.
Now, she didn't get that mink coat and those diamonds she was wearing at the inquest in Culver. More important, she didn't get that continental look here either. So what's the story?
Well, her name was Pauline Underwood before she married George. Born and raised right here in Culver. Of course, she went to school in the East, and she's been in Europe a couple of times, but most of her life's been right here.
She is a mighty pretty widow.
And a mighty rich one, too. Henderson had it.
I know. This divorce she talked about at the inquest yesterday.
Well, everybody in town knew they weren't getting along. Never did get along. How could they? Pauline's 26 and George is 59. He could have been her father. As a matter of fact, he almost was.
Well, tell me about that.
You got a drink?
Hmm? Oh, yeah.
Well, George raised Pauline from the time she was 14. He paid for all her schooling and growing up. She didn't have any folks after her old man died. George was pretty good to her.
He sure was. Was he a friend of her parents?
Well, Tom Underwood worked out at the ranch for George. When he died, there was Pauline standing around.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, thanks.
And she eventually married him and his money, huh?
Well, I wouldn't put it that way exactly. I think she liked him. Now, I've gone over what you're thinking, son. Those two were talking about divorce for some time. The papers had been drawn up for a settlement. She'd got a lot of alimony and so on. Oh, Pauline had no call to push him out that window or have him pushed out. At least not for money.
All right. Suppose he didn't want a divorce. Suppose he loved her and she came to the hotel room that morning and he pleaded with her to try all over again. Suppose she said no. Suppose she said no in a great big cold way. And George Henderson sat there and thought about it after she left. And he got sick all over and he walked over to that window and...
Suicide?
What do you think? You know him.
He wasn't a suicide type.
So. Oh, nobody's the suicide type until they come to the end of the line, Eve. Then it's too late to interview them and ask them how they got there. Everybody seems to think it was an accident, so I'm just throwing words around.
Well, you have a right to do that if you aren't satisfied, son.
Hey, getting back to this hotel again. Who might want me to get out of town and not ask any questions?
Anybody.
Well, who?
No idea.
But it's somebody who has some feelings in this. Hey, who owns this hotel, Eve?
Noah Baxter.
Who's Noah Baxter?
Rancher. Got a place about 15 miles from here. Pretty big man.
Uh-huh. Friend of Henderson's?
Yeah.
And let me put that question a little different. Baxter, a friend of Mrs. Henderson's?
I don't know.
Can you find out?
I can try.
Well, find out about him and any other friends, Eve. Friends that might be younger, that might have gone to Europe or school in the East.
Yeah, sure. What are you thinking now, son?
Well, now, if I were Mrs. Henderson and my husband fell out of a window in this hotel and killed himself, I'd hire a lawyer and I'd sue the hotel for damages. If the insurance company didn't pay off my claim, I'd hire a lawyer and insist that they pay that claim.
I'd do those things right away, Sheriff, especially if I thought it was all legitimate.
Yeah. Yeah.
2 hours later, I received a wire from Tim Connors. He requested me to look up a man named Thurber, an insurance broker living in Great Falls. Expense account item 6, $4.92, tank of gas. I borrowed Sheriff Holton's car and drove the 80-odd miles to Great Falls that afternoon. Mr. Thurber bought lunch.
My Lord, I hope there isn't anything to all this, Mr. Dollar. I just hope there isn't. George Henderson.
Well, there isn't anything to anything yet, Mr. Thurber. I'm still trying to find out the facts.
Oh, I knew you were over in Culver. I tried to call you there a couple of times. You were out both times. Finally, I put in a call to the home office in Hartford. I talked to this man, Connors, with the adjustment agency.
Yeah.
You see, Mr. Dollar, it's like this. I've been over in Jackson Hole for 5 days now hunting duck. We were way in, and I didn't hear about Henderson's death until I got back yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Now, look, Mr. Dollar, I don't know what reflection this will have on your attitude toward this case, but 2 days before I left, Mr. Henderson telephoned me here in Great Falls. He said he wanted to change the beneficiary on his policy.
Oh, in other words, he was going to cut his wife out, huh?
Yes, I suppose so. I know they weren't getting along.
There'd been talk of divorce.
Yes, I guess so.
Uh-huh. Did he name a new beneficiary?
Yes, a school teacher in Culver named Matilda Knickerbocker. Everybody calls her Maddie.
What was his connection with her?
None that I know of. I think it was just a name for him to throw in until he could decide on another beneficiary why he didn't have...
Wait a minute. Maddie Knickerbocker.
Just a school teacher. Everybody knows her. He was awful mad when he talked to me that day. I could tell it in his voice. Now, here's what might interest you just a little more. The day I left on my hunting trip, Mr. Henderson phoned me again. He said to never mind. Mrs. Henderson was still his beneficiary.
Had you changed the policies yet?
No.
Are you sure it was Henderson who telephoned you?
Well, yes, if... I think it was him.
Do you remember when you got the call?
Oh, somewhere around noon, a little later, I guess.
He died between 12:30 and 1.
And it must have been just before he fell out the window.
He phoned you long distance from Culver, huh?
Yes, sir.
Well, he was supposed to have been in the hotel all morning, so he had to phone from his room.
Well, you can check that, can't you?
You'd be surprised how hard it is to check simple things like that around the Butte Hotel. Did you know Henderson very well, Mr. Thurber?
He was a customer. I wrote a lot of insurance for him.
Know his wife?
Oh, yes.
Well, tell me about them. Go ahead, Mr. Thurber. Now, look, accidents rarely have reason behind them. Suicides and murders always do.
You don't think it was an accident?
Well, let's say I've heard enough and seen enough to make it a draw so far. Go ahead, tell me about them.
And I wish I was married to Mrs. Henderson. I mean, I wish she could see me. I think most any man who's ever met her hoped the same thing. Young men, old men, any kind. But she picked George. George was as tough and leathery as these mountains around us, exactly her opposite. But Pauline married him.
He raised her. He was close to her all her adult life.
Yes. But, Mr. Dollar, you know and I know she didn't have to marry him. She could have married anybody here in Culver or anybody in London or Paris. You see what I mean?
Not quite.
Well, I always had the idea that after she married him, she kept letting him know she could have had anybody else she wanted.
Go ahead, Thurber.
I think she married him for his money. I think she would have killed him for his money.
Johnny Dollar.
This is Mrs. Henderson. You asked me to call, Mr. Dollar?
Yes, Mrs. Henderson. I'm with Paramount Insurance Adjusters.
Oh, yes.
You probably know we asked for the inquest into your husband's death.
Yes, I know.
We're trying to clear up the entire matter as quickly as we can, Mrs. Henderson. I'd like to talk to you.
Oh?
Hate to trouble you at a time like this.
Well, that's all right, Mr. Dollar. When do you want to talk?
May I come out to the house this afternoon?
There's a nice restaurant called Big Horn Lodge on the highway. How about meeting you there at, say, 4 o'clock?
Good. I'll be there. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Paramount Insurance Adjusters, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Henderson matter. Expense account continued. Item 7, $5. One pair of galoshes, believe it or not. It snowed in Culver, Montana during the night, all night. By morning, 14 inches of fine new snow covered everything in sight. After my phone call to Mrs. Henderson, I spent the morning trying to rent an automobile.
There was none to be had, so that afternoon I dropped over to see Eve Holton, my sheriff friend.
Oh, son, you're going to catch your death unless you start wearing this car.
Yeah, I'll remember that, Eve. But maybe I won't need one.
Oh?
Yeah, I think I'll be leaving Culver pretty soon.
Well, I hope you don't mean that, son.
I'm afraid I do. I'll have to tie this case up one way or another pretty quick.
Why?
My company wants me to get back home. I got a letter this morning.
Oh, well, how can I help you?
Well, for one thing, you can lend me your car again. I have a date with a lady out at the Bighorn Lodge.
Pretty fancy. You can have the old thing anytime you want it. You know that, son. Who's the lady?
George Henderson's widow.
Oh?
Now, I know what you're going to say. Why go after her? Why bother her until I have something to go on? Well, I got to do something, Eve. I'm no nearer now to knowing whether Henderson was pushed out that hotel window, fell, or jumped. I think I have enough of an idea of Henderson and his wife to pick up some valuable information from her. Any objections?
Nope. Johnny, a couple of days ago you asked me to look up people who might have been especially friendly to Mrs. Henderson. You still want to know about them?
Yeah, sure.
Well, I'm working on it.
Anyone so far?
Nobody I'd put in that category. What time you have to be at the Bighorn?
4.
It'll take you a while. Wouldn't hurt to start right now. She's parked out back.
Okay, thanks, Eve.
Good luck. And don't let her wrangle you, son. She could do it if she wanted to.
Goodbye, Eve. 10 minutes later, I was on the road to Bighorn Lodge, which also happened to be the same road I'd traveled 2 days before to attend George Henderson's funeral. As I drove past the graveyard, white and stark against the blue winter sky, I noticed a car parked along the side of the road, a little Chevy coupe, about 1952. There was the figure of a woman, all alone, standing by George Henderson's fresh grave. Her head was bowed. She didn't notice me as I walked up. A gray-haired woman, about 45, slight, delicate, gentle. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to start it.
Oh, that's all right. Must be getting late. Dear, it is.
Do I know you?
Why, I don't know. I'm Mattie Knickerbocker.
The name had startled me. The day before, an insurance broker in Great Falls had mentioned her. Told me that George Henderson had named her his beneficiary, then changed his mind a few minutes before he died.
Your name's not Campbell, is it?
No. Johnny Dollar.
Oh, Johnny Dollar. You remind me of a boy I had in one of my classes once, Torrey Campbell.
Oh, you're a teacher, Miss Knickerbocker?
Yes. Everybody knows me, I think. Or at least I flatter myself that way. Well, I should be going.
I knew Mr. Henderson, too.
Oh? He was a wonderful man, George. He was very dear to me. I'll find it difficult getting used to the fact that he'll never be around anymore. George had a wonderful laugh, didn't he?
Yes, he did, Mrs. Knickerbocker.
I never really thought that he ever grew up. Of course, you knew him in a business way, and I'm sure he was very, very grown up in business. But it doesn't hurt to think of him this way now, does it?
I don't think so, Miss Knickerbocker.
I didn't come to his funeral. I didn't think I could bear it. I thought I'd just drive out this afternoon and say goodbye by myself.
Well, I apologize for interrupting you.
Not at all. Please. Funny little things. The birds in the snow.
Oh.
Such tiny, wonderful little things. A little bit of God in each of them, Mr. Dollar, wouldn't you say?
Yes, ma'am.
I don't know why. I think George would like to know they're here, near him.
Miss Knickerbocker, I have to tell you...
No, you don't, Mr. Dollar. I know who you really are. Everyone in town knows. You seem like a nice young man. Was it curiosity that made you stop your car?
Yeah, I suppose so. I apologize.
Oh, you needn't. I'm just an old friend of George's, saying goodbye to him. Good afternoon, Mr. Dollar.
Goodbye. Talking to Mattie Knickerbocker, I felt that for the first time, somebody, namely Mattie, had talked frankly and truthfully about George Henderson. I was still thinking of the frail, drab little woman with the nice blue eyes when I met Pauline Henderson at the Bighorn Lodge.
What are these matters you want to clear up, Mr. Dollar?
Oh, just some doubts in my mind about your husband's death. What do you drink?
Pernod.
Pernod?
I learned to like it in France.
All right. One Pernod, bourbon, a little water on the side.
Yes, sir.
You sound like George when you order.
Hey, I like your Bighorn Lodge. And I have to say, when it's elegant in the West, it's elegant.
I'd like a light, please.
Oh, sorry. Sure.
Thank you.
Mrs. Henderson, do you mind if I don't stall any longer with the drinks, the smokes, and the compliments?
I'm surprised you've stalled this long. I've heard you're a very blunt and impulsive man.
I spoke to an insurance agent named Thurber yesterday in Great Falls. Your husband's agent. Mr. Thurber told me that your husband wanted to name a new beneficiary last week.
Really?
Yeah. He named Matilda Knickerbocker. Mattie Knickerbocker.
I'm not surprised, I suppose. Mattie's a lovely woman. I know George was very fond of her.
Mr. Thurber also told me that Mr. Henderson changed his mind about that the day he died. In fact, he phoned Mr. Thurber in Great Falls and told him to leave the policy as it was. He did that a few minutes after you left his hotel room, a few minutes before he died. Can you explain any of that, Mrs. Henderson?
Why don't you ask Mattie Knickerbocker?
Because I don't think she'd know. I ran into her this afternoon and I talked to her. Or not about this, just about other things. I'll look her up again if I have to. But it's you I want information from now.
Then why don't you ask what you mean, Mr. Dollar?
All right. Did something happen in that hotel room that made him change his mind about you?
That's better. I do wish that ridiculous little man would bring our drinks.
He will.
Don't misunderstand what happened in the hotel room. George and I were going to be divorced. He moved out of the house a month ago. We went to his attorneys and drew up a tentative property settlement.
You mean...
Dunlap, Etter, Reardon, and Blake, Great Falls. They have a copy of that settlement. George was quite generous to me. So I didn't kill him for his money, if that's what you're thinking.
Here we are, sir. Pernod, bourbon.
Thank you.
I didn't see George for 3 weeks or so after we made the settlement. Then we happened to meet one day in Culver, and... Well, we had a rather bitter argument. It was one of those ridiculous things. We quarreled and parted very angrily. The whole thing was childish. My first impulse was to go right back to the lawyers and demand every unreasonable thing I could on the divorce settlement. I guess George's first impulse was to cancel me out as his beneficiary.
Did you go to a lawyer, Mrs. Henderson?
No. No, I cooled off. I cooled off considerably, Mr. Dollar. After all, George had been everything to me most of my life. I was truly sorry we never got along as man and wife. I'm glad that we made it up before he died. That morning. He apologized when I came by the hotel. I apologized. After I left, he fell out the window.
Then I can assume that this business with the policies had to do with the argument.
Assume what you like, Mr. Dollar.
I can understand why you're annoyed by me and my questions. It's just that it's kind of hard for us to believe that a man involved in divorcing his wife would still name her as his beneficiary. I say that because of past experience. Oh, it's happened, but as usual.
I could have told you that we were reconciled that day in the hotel, that we were going to drop the whole divorce matter, and that George was coming back to the house to live.
Yes, you could have told me that, Mrs. Henderson. Mr. Connors in our home office in Hartford called you a few days ago. You hung up on him. Why?
Well, I was very upset. I've never been a widow before.
Uh-huh. I believe you, Mrs. Henderson, sitting here like this. You're a lovely person, and I know it, and you know it. And this is a pretty nice place to conduct business. Why didn't you ask me to your home?
I preferred to talk to you here.
That's what I thought. I saved all the "did your husband have any enemies" and "did he seem depressed" questions for another time. But before I went to bed that night, I read and reread Mrs. Henderson's testimony given at the coroner's inquest. The next morning, I interviewed all of the people at the Butte Hotel who'd been on duty the day Henderson fell out the window. After that, I dropped in to see Eve Holton.
Here it is, Johnny, right here. Personal effects of the deceased included 4 suits of men's clothing, 14 shirts, 5 pairs of hosiery.
Was there a bottle in that room, Sheriff?
Liquor?
Yeah.
No bottle. Nothing like it, son.
All right. He didn't call down and have a bellboy bring him a bottle or send him any drinks. The chambermaid swears there was no liquor in his room all the time he lived at the hotel. You say he was a light drinker. Now, what light drinker takes a nip before he has his breakfast?
Who said he had a drink that morning?
Mrs. Henderson.
What?
On the witness stand, under oath at the inquest. She testified that her husband had a drink before she came up to the room and while she was there. Now, mind you, she didn't say he was drunk, but she did say he had been drinking. You read over that transcript.
So?
So I think she threw that in, made sure it got in, because it's sometimes hard to believe that a cold, sober man will walk out of a hotel window and kill himself accidentally. A drunk or a drinker might do it. You and I and everybody at that inquest somehow got the impression that Henderson was slightly tipsy that morning, and Mrs. Henderson saw to that. Now then, if Henderson had a drink, I want to know where he got it. Tell me, Eve, no bottle in the room, no bottle brought up to the room. Where did he get that drink?
That's a pretty good question, son.
There'll be another intriguing episode in our story of the Henderson matter tomorrow.
Tomorrow, the wind-up. Yeah, the whole case blows sky high. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure and join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. You know, I've got a couple of different ideas about how this might turn out. I've listened to this before, but I don't remember for sure what happens. I have a couple of outcomes in my head, but I don't know which one might be right. In some ways, I don't know if we've been given enough information. We do know there are some people that don't want Johnny continuing his investigation. But we also haven't been given any clear suspects beyond the wife. And that almost seems too predictable. So we're going to have to see how this all shakes out. You'll want to be with us on Friday for the finale of this episode. We do have one listener comment, and this one comes from iTunes. Bill from Whidbey Island says, "Hey, Adam, my iPod is my constant companion while I'm doing outside chores. Great Detectives helps pass the time while I'm going round and round with the lawnmower. I appreciate your commitment and the hours of time that you put into your passion. Keep going." Well, thanks so much, Bill. I appreciate your comment. Whidbey Island, a great area over in Washington, was actually... interesting fact, was actually where my parents honeymooned. All right, well, that will actually do it for today. We will be back tomorrow with Sherlock Holmes, and join us on Friday when we will wrap up the Henderson matter. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter, Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.